It's Ian Pickus, and we're back in the Congressional Corner today with our old friend David Hawkins, senior editor of The American Leader, who formerly worked at The Fulcrum and CQ and Roll Call. David, great to have you back. How you been?
I've been recovering from one of the craziest news months in American political history.
It really has been. We had a presidential assassination attempt. Then we had an incumbent president abruptly leave the race for a second term. Do you have any historical antecedents here?
Well, I mean, not really. I guess the closest would be the spring of 1968, which was when Lyndon Johnson surprised almost everyone by announcing he was no longer running for re-election. That was in early March. Then you had the assassination of Dr. King in early April and the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy, who had by then become, you know, a leading candidate to replace Johnson at the head of the Democratic ticket in early June. Of course, the Vietnam War was raging. That's the closest analog. But man, that took 3 months for those three things to play out. And the month that we just had between essentially I would mark it as the time period from the famous debate at the end of June to the time Kamala Harris became the presumptive Democratic nominee. At the end of July, was really only about 4 weeks.
So now Kamala Harris and the Democrats are getting ready for the Democratic National Convention starting on Monday in Chicago. And given all of the upheaval that we just talked about, what are your expectations for this? Because, I mean, it's typically a pretty stage-managed affair at this point.
It's a very stage-managed affair. Of course, the stage managers have had to have a different cast of characters to work with. It seems like the reporting that we have now, which I suppose could change, is that it's going to be a relatively ambitious convention, which will include the two nominees, Vice President Harris and Governor Walz, actually leaving Chicago on the second day of the convention and going down to Milwaukee, which is, of course, an even more of a swing state than Illinois. It is a swing state where Illinois is not, to do a rally, potentially at the same place, in the same venue, the same indoor sports arena where Donald Trump's convention was, really trying to take it to Trump and show that their rallies are even bigger than his, or at least as big as his convention. So that's the kind of ambitious stage managing that they've taken on in recent days. Yes, it's going to be otherwise well choreographed. President Biden is going to be He's going to come to Milwaukee for the first day. He'll be the principal speaker on Monday night, and then we'll leave. So that will be sort of his swan song in national politics after half a century, an emotional time. President Obama, we think, on Tuesday, Walz on Wednesday, of course, Harris on Thursday. It'll be a love fest. It should provide a boost in the polls. I mean, there's almost always a convention week boost for the person being nominated. That will add to the momentum that we have seen in the last 3 weeks or so. You know, whether it lasts, I guess that's obviously the $64 bazillion question.
Yeah, and maybe we can all learn a lesson because, I mean, when President Biden had his bad debate, the race was over. When President Trump had his dramatic photo after the bullet grazed his ear, the race was over. Now Kamala Harris appears to be edging ahead of former President Trump. But we do still have, you know, under 100 days to go. I mean, we don't know what will happen next.
That's true, right? A lot can happen in 80 days. Given the pace at which we've been operating politically, we should expect more to happen. You know, some of the October surprises happened in June this year, but there's, you know, we still have September surprises and October surprises. Yes, a ton can happen. And anybody who thinks this thing is over is making a big mistake.
Now, all of that said, the last time you were on the show, you thought that former President Trump really had an edge in the race. Do you think the dynamic has changed materially with the Democratic change of standard bearer?
You know, I guess I do. I mean, how materially? I mean, let's remember here that what this entire election is about is 7% or so of the electorate in 7 or so states. So this is a small percentage of the electorate in a small number of places. So all this money that is being spent And all this marketing is really about this very elusive sliver of the electorate. And so do I think that, that the Vice President Harris and Tim Walz have certainly, I can tell you this, I went and saw the two of them in Philadelphia. I'm sorry, I went and saw Joe Biden and Kamala Harris in Philadelphia in January at a DNC event, which should have been, you know, they should have had them eating out of his hands. It was completely flat. It was completely boring. Biden was really off his, you know, off his game. Harris was word salad intense. And then I went and saw Harris and Walz at the roll, at the big rally in Philadelphia, the day Walz was officially anointed. And it was one of the most energetic campaign rallies on either side that I've ever seen. And you can, and this was, of course, this was 12,000 people. They were party loyalists, but their relief was palpable, and their excitement that they now had a chance was palpable. And of course, Pennsylvania is the biggest prize. The 7% of the electorate in Pennsylvania is the biggest prize because they're the biggest of the swing states at 19 electoral votes. So, yes, I think the dynamic has changed. And I think it seems as though President Trump and his team have been caught a little bit flat-footed, even though they were, their side was the one sort of spreading this conspiracy theory for more than 2 years that Joe Biden was just a Potemkin candidate and he'd be switched out at the last minute. They seem to have been talking about that for years, but they don't seem to have been ready for it, least of all President Trump, who really seemed to think he had it in the bag at his convention and now does not.
Yeah, you get a sense that they're the dog who, I don't know, caught up to the mail truck in some respects. Biden's out, which is what they said they wanted. And then Trump was immediately complaining that Biden was no longer in the race. So given what you said about Pennsylvania, were you surprised that Josh Shapiro was not the pick for the ticket?
I guess by the end, I was not surprised. I certainly thought at the, I mean, this was a very, by the end, again, we're talking about this 1 month where every, you know, where 2 weeks was a lifetime. So how, gosh, how long did it take for him, her to pick her vice presidential nominee? 8 or 9, 10 days? It certainly seemed at the start like he made the most sense. By the end, there was significant grumbling among several important Democratic constituencies that Josh Shapiro would be an awful pick because he would, fairly or unfairly, as the only Jew among the vice presidential shortlist, that he would galvanize pro-Palestinian protest. There'd be protests following the campaign everywhere. That there was another vein of criticism about Shapiro, led by his principal rival in Pennsylvania politics, Senator John Fetterman, that Shapiro was overly ambitious, wouldn't be a good team player. Anyway, there seemed to be the most organized opposition to anybody on that shortlist seemed to be focused on Shapiro. And the countervailing view, which Shapiro now has embraced, is I'll help deliver Pennsylvania even if I'm not on the ticket. And he does. He is a very popular governor, approval rating in the mid-60s, which is pretty good after 2 years in his second year as governor. And maybe he can deliver.
Let's talk in the last minute or so we have today about the actual choice, Tim Walz. You obviously cover Congress, and it seems like he had a lot of support among his former colleagues in the House to be added to the ticket. What can you tell us about his background?
Well, so, I mean, his background, which is, you know, the has been exhaustively reported in part because he was such a, you know, a virtual unknown nationally. I mean, so I think people more or less know that he was a social studies teacher and a defensive line football coach by career. Also, as part of his social studies curriculum, took a class to a George W. Bush rally, and they were excluded because some of them were wearing John Kerry buttons back in 2004, and that launched him. He and his students decided he would run for Congress. And he won, and I did know him a bit in Congress, but I will tell you that in Congress he was viewed as sort of an amiable sort of middle to backbencher, not a superstar, certainly not a hot dog, much more the workhorse than the show horse, so not, you know, not a press hog, and not somebody that as a reporter you would seek out for the flashy quote, but viewed by his colleagues very fondly. I will say that when he decided to run for governor of Minnesota, I was a little bit surprised. I thought, you know, there was, wow, he's got more ambition than I would have thought. And then so after whatever it is, six terms in the House, went on to become governor and remains a popular governor and remains, as I say, people who spend time with him like the guy. You know, he has his so-called good dad energy, which is sort of the phrase of the moment, seems to play well with other politicians. And, of course, he's coined the one-word campaign slogan of the century by finding the word weird to label the other side.
We've been speaking with David Hawkins of the American Leader, our regular friend here on the Congressional Corner. David, thanks so much. And when we come back the next time, let's talk about the Republican vice presidential nominee.
Sounds good.